Today is Friday, April 28th, 2006. Dr. Brage Golding's birthday, and I am delighted to be here to continue our interview. This is Susan Resnick, and this is part of the Oral History Project at San Diego State University. Good morning, Dr. Golding.
Good morning, Susan.
Tell me about what happened when a gentleman from California came to see you in Cincinnati. What was his name? Do you recall?
Glenn Dumke.
Okay.
D-U-M-K-E.
Okay. And what happened when you met him?
Well, we had a nice chat on various things, and finally I asked him why he made the trouble to stop there to see me. And he said, well, he had heard about me. It was good news, I mean, good information. And he was looking for a president for two schools that he was at. California, one in San Francisco and one in San Diego. And he talked to me. And, so he did, and he went on his merry way. And sometime later he called and asked me to come out and visit. One, which one I was might be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, and I said, I think San Diego, even though I had never been here.
Mm-hmm.
The other was San Francisco State. Diego sounded more attractive, geographically speaking.
Yeah.
Came out, met the Board of Trustees, and all that stuff that you go through. Interviews and so forth. Subsequently, to make a long story short, I was offered a job at San Diego State.
And this was in 1972, I believe?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I visited this campus,
mm-hmm.
before the offer was made, I found out when people talked to me there that they had wanted another president. Another prospective president who was on the campus, and that he was very popular. And they talked to the chancellor and said they would like to have him, and he turned that down. There were reasons, but
I'm sure he had reasons, right.
And so when I came, I was not popular. That is, without their knowing anything about me.
Well, you were from the outside.
Yes.
Right.
And we went around. I was interviewed by lots of people. And how magic, I guess. Popularity, but magic. I convinced them that I was not an ogre and I was reasonably competent. And they turned around and approved. And so I was given an offer by the chancellor and the mm-hmm. board. At the time, I accepted.
Mm-hmm.
It was rather exciting to come out to California and go to San Diego. As I said before, I had never been to.
Yes.
And except for my interview. Moved, as you might expect, to California. I drove one car out, and my wife drove a Jeep out here.
Oh, my.
And it was a very interesting trip. I came out first because I had a deadline. And she followed subsequently in this old Jeep. And it was a day I can remember simply because as I went back to meet her and drive with her from Albuquerque.
Ah.
I flew to Albuquerque and met her there. The timing was good
mm-hmm.
and helped her drive out here. What makes it memorable is coming into San Diego, we had a snowstorm.
Really?
The only one I've ever seen here.
Oh, my. I didn't know there ever had been one.
I didn't either.
Oh.
It wasn't a heavy one, but it was a distinct snowstorm.
Wow.
So I remember the day on which we came. That was my introduction to San Diego.
And then once you got settled, you had a home here.
Yes, they had promised me a home, but the legislature was a little tight-fisted and didn't want to give me. It was such a big amount in the budget of California that they just couldn't stand it. It started out well.
I would like to know about who you enjoyed working with on the faculty and how it worked, whether, you know, in terms of those in administration, those in faculty, what was it like?
Well, this was my third university after Wright State and
Purdue. Right.
And it's by far the biggest university I'd been at. Except for Purdue, in my whole experience. We had a lot of people.
And it was also a time of beginning the transition from what I've read, from it being a college to becoming a university officially.
Not till I got there.
Right.
Yes, it was called...
was it San Diego State College or something like that?
Yes, it was called a college. It was indistinguishable from the others. There were about 18 schools in the system.
Right.
One of my campaigns when I got here was to get the name changed to San Diego State. Everybody here called it that. And fortunately was successful by working on the trustees around the chancellor, who didn't want, he wanted all the schools to be named the same way.
I see.
He was looking for uniformity for everything. And we were by far the largest school in the system, and the best, by all measures. No one came close to that number.
Right. So there were people, as I recall, that you did enjoy working with Trevor Colburn.
Trevor Colburn.
Colburn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whom I employed after a pretty intensive search as for academic vice president, which is a crucial position, as you certainly know.
I certainly do.
As it turned out, it was a good choice, and he was a very good academic vice president. I had no idea when I went there what the setup was, what the academic programs were, and what type of school it was, but I soon learned that my predecessor, Malcolm Love, who was dearly beloved by faculty, and I think the students too, was a education professor previously, who was a school that emphasized education. And I just come from some technically oriented schools, and I was picked previously because I had a technical background. And I said, we can't keep this up. Everybody coming through this huge school is not going to be a teacher. Nothing wrong with being a teacher, as I was, but we needed more for the whole community around San Diego County. So I started, I guess you could call it a sneaky campaign to change the character of the university.
So what did you do?
I started to suggest, well, first of all, I must tell you this. One of the first things I did was to meet with the chairman of the Senate, faculty senate, And I've dealt with faculty senates all my career, and they are sometimes good and sometimes not so good. Mm-hmm. But being faculty, they always have an ingrained distrust of administrators. Mm-hmm. So one of my jobs was to win over the faculty. And I called in the, it's not chairman, president of the faculty senate. Mm-hmm. I got acquainted with him, and he was a nice guy. And I said, I want to make a bargain with you. I hope you will agree. I said, you're running the senate, and I'm running the university. I will make you a promise that I will not do or institute any changes without consulting with you. And you can consult with your Senate, provided the Senate doesn't do anything without consulting me first. In other words, we're a team, and we have to work to the same
end. How did he feel about that? How did he respond?
He said, boy, he says, that sounds good.
Great.
And we did that as long as he was chairman.
Who was he? What was his name?
Dave.
Well, we can always check it out. Let's see. That wasn't James Cobble, was it? No, that was someone else. Well, we'll find out. So,
Dave Ferris.
Dave Ferris.
F-E-R-R-I-S.
Okay. And so that was a very good start. That was interesting.
It was a bargain, and he kept it, and I kept it.
Okay.
In fact, it won him over. And as a result, when I did some things, there were a change. Some of them were fairly drastic. And I had him in and talked to him about it and the reasons for it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that sounds good. I said, talk to your Senate. And he's the one that did it. I had no pride in being the originator of ideas. All I wanted to do was get something accomplished.
I totally understand. Yeah.
I had no pride of ownership, really. And so this system worked, and worked very successfully.
That's terrific. What kind of changes did you begin to institute?
Well, we had a lot of hiring to do because we were short of faculty. I was very careful to pick some people who had technical backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
We started programs in the various sciences, and so they were there, but they were weak.
Yeah.
And getting Jim Cobble, for example.
Tell me about him.
Was an example. He was a chemistry professor from Purdue University, and I knew him. And he had been out to the university, that is San Diego State, interview for something, for chemistry professors, I recall. And I had not seen him or heard. The faculty had done it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
I knew he was there, but they didn't know. Mm-hmm. When I asked if I could see him, they said he'd already left. So I couldn't see him the first time he came. But once I got settled in, we were looking for someone for running the foundation of the university. Almost all, certainly big universities, but most of them have a foundation or something equivalent to that, which gets monies from outside the system. So they're not beholden to the state for funds. They raise funds for extracurricular things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they have a foundation which is separate from the university and California businesses, California's universities. And it was a going foundation, but not large, as most of them are,
mm-hmm.
except the old private ones. I mentioned the first one, having a little bit of cash on hand, mm-hmm. Harvard.
Yes.
Anyway, I called him, asked him to come back.
Mm-hmm.
I told him who he knew. And I said, Jim, come back. I want to talk to you. And he says, what for? And I told him. He said, I don't think I'd be interested. I said, come. And as I mentioned to you earlier, what got him out here was the fact, which I did not know at that time, mm-hmm. that his parents lived here. And he grew up here. And he did come. And we had a long talk. And I had been aware of this problem before he came, mm-hmm. someone told me. And I played on that pretty hard. But I convinced him that there was a future here for him. Mm-hmm. And he said he didn't want to give up research and so forth. And I guaranteed that he could continue his research. He didn't have to go to class and teach every day mm-hmm. as a head of a foundation, mm-hmm. although he did teach on his own. And it turned out that he came after persuasions. He accepted, and we had a good man in that place.
Well, that's terrific.
And it turned out to be one of the best professors mm-hmm. At the university, as the faculty would agree. He was very popular and very good.
Very good.
And he stayed in that position until I left. 5 years.
Good. I read something about making changes in terms of...
Making what?
Changes in terms of the emphasis for what faculty was supposed to produce or standards.
Oh, yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, it's rather interesting, I guess. The curriculum, as I mentioned earlier, was mm-hmm. mainly education.
Yes.
The emphasis was on education. We were a teachers' college.
Right. That's how it started, as a normal school.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And the buildings still stand elsewhere in town.
Yeah.
But it's a lower level school now.
Yeah.
I talked to the deans and with Trevor Colburn once he came as academic vice president. Leads me to another thought that I want to tell you, because this was another problem, mm-hmm. and there were several problems in getting used to the system, which is quite different from most systems I was familiar with. These universities were ruled by the chancellor, and the chancellor was always looking for uniformity, as I mentioned earlier. I guess he thought it made it simpler, mm-hmm. but we were entirely different outlook at San Diego State from most of the other schools in the system. And I talked to the chairman of the departments and the deans and with Trevor Colburn's assistants. They are all in agreement with me. And Dave Ferris, who could work on the Senate, which was important. We slowly transformed by hiring non-education teachers.
I see.
And putting them in science places. Mm-hmm. We had the science, but it was secondary.
I understand.
And other things, engineering, which never did get big at that time. And gradually, by sneak infiltration, I guess you'd call it, we gradually changed it. We got some very good people. We were very careful in whom we hired. And fortunately, different from Jim Covell's situation, we could persuade a lot of very good people to come here because of the climate and the location, mm-hmm. which was a help, a big help. So it turned out to be very good. And then we tried to be innovative and do different things.
What did you do?
Well, for one thing, I put emphasis on the foundation. Mm-hmm. Because if we could build it big enough and rich enough, so to speak, we could hire some people and pay salaries, augmenting them if necessary. Mm-hmm. Not, I may add, like the university, we paid in some special cases, salaries. But we also had money then to give grants to the faculty to use for supplies and travel and so forth that was needed to the research that they did and so forth. We put considerably more emphasis on research. Now, I'm a person who wants good teachers.
Right.
And we look for good teachers. But research is also necessary because the country depends on research at academic institutions in addition to other means of research, other people. And so we had money, wanted more money for that and so forth. And I mentioned now in passing that the Jim Cobble, who I put in as head vice president for research, mm-hmm. or for the foundation.
Foundation, right.
Was so successful at doing this that the foundation now is the biggest foundation, as to my knowledge. It certainly is of the system, but I think of most other schools, UC included. And it's been a wildly successful one, so successful that the present president has developed contacts with the faculty all over the world, and we have people helping other people all over the world,
countries. That's marvelous.
Mexico was first. That was an obvious one. And then I wish Jim Cobble could talk to him, because he's good. Anyway, we were very good friends, and I was delighted the way it went.
How did the faculty feel? Were any of them threatened by the changes, or?
Most of them were in favor of it.
Okay.
You might be surprised, but a lot of faculty who came were good faculty who had been doing research and wanted to continue it. And secondly, most of them, I think, were smart enough to realize that we needed it for the community.
I did read an oral history from Professor George Gross, who said he enjoyed working with you so much.
That's true. Yeah, we were good friends.
Yeah. So it sounds like this was a very positive step. Were there any marked challenges or that came up during the time there? Difficulties?
There are always difficulties, no matter what the job is.
Right.
But if you're at the top, you get a lot of difficulties coming across your desk. When I came, there was a young professor who was notorious, and that's the word. In the existence of the chancellor's office, because the chancellor was a straight man, and this guy was very liberal and very vocal. And the other members of the faculty looked at him and stood in awe of what he got away with. Until just before I came, the chancellor, Malcolm Lowe, was the president then, going out.
Right.
And the chancellor took it upon himself to fire the man. So when I came, he had just been fired. And a week or two after I came, my secretary came in to me one day and said, "There are two young students here that want to talk to you. Shall I send them away?" And I said, "No, send them in." So they came in and stood in front of me out of my desk and said, "We want to talk to you about a serious thing." And I said, "Okay, sit down." And they said, "No, we prefer to stand." And it was defensive act, I think, on their part. And I said, "Okay, what's on your mind?" And they said, "Well, the chancellor has fired. We don't know how much you know about it, but the chancellor has fired a professor, P. Peter Palmer. Utterances, actions on the campus, and we think he's great. And we demand that you reinstate him.
Ah, they demanded.
They demanded. And I looked at him and I said, "You're demanding?" And they said, "Yes." And I said, "Don't you think it would be more diplomatic to request?" I said, "I don't think you're in a position to demand." And they looked at me. We were taught by our professors to demand. That was the attitude at that time. Mm-hmm. We had a nice talk there, and I sent him away fine, saying that I didn't have the authority to do it after the chancellor had done it. Because he was above, I worked under the chancellor. That was the first day. Contact with problems on the campus.
Well, of course, this is also within the context of the history of the times in general.
That's right.
And the turbulent 60s preceded this time. I mean, it was feminism, community activism, everything.
Well, I didn't tell you something. No. That comes later. Okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
We're going to have to edit it.
That's okay. I think that the whole tenor of the times, I have a little key here that is saying student protests. This is sort of just a general outline of contextual outline, and that was something that was so prevalent throughout the country.
I'm the best person to talk about that because I went through it at Kent State.
And I was going to say we can talk about Kent State after this. Right, because that's written as a key event on the list I have.
I even was called to New York on a television program to talk about Kent State after the...
I look forward to that. Other kinds of challenges that arose while you were at San Diego State.
You talking about good challenges or bad challenges?
Your choice. Both of the above would be fine.
If you were a press person, it would be all the bad challenges.
That's right. No, but I'm not. So good challenges that are fine, too.
Oh, I would mention just finishing up the foundation. It became wildly successful, but in the beginning, when I came, while it was functioning, it was at a very low level. And there's a person in Washington, in the government, who is in charge of all monies that go to foundations. And I was asked, among the whole system, to go to Washington with the coterie of my people who were knowledgeable to see what I could do. And we all traveled to Washington.
That's exciting.
And met with this man, and I put forth an impassioned plea, and the others helped, of course, and we got the system to be able to take in more monies and be free to solicit federal grants all over the country.
Well, that's terrific.
And with that release, that's when the, with that and Jim Cobble, the foundation soared.
How, that's great. That's certainly a positive development.
Yeah, that was a big one that sticks in my mind, right?
I read something about you changing the logo for the school.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Remind me about that with Kent State, too.
Okay.
The logos for these schools, and most schools have a logo for their letterheads, say something about the school. And so it's important, even though you wouldn't think of it that way or normally.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Well, you... several of us sat around around a table, faculty and administrators, and I sat around a table in my room one day and tried to develop a logo. And we were successful, I think, in developing a logo that was attractive and indicative of the university. After we argued, of course, over many different designs. That's a small change, but a significant one. I'd like to go on to another adjunct to the university, which is very important, and that is we have a radio television station in the city that belongs to San Diego State.
KPBS.
Radio and television.
I am a listener and a supporter. And a watcher.
Yeah. Well, I was, by virtue of my office, in charge of that too.
Oh, how wonderful.
And I went through the place early on and talked to the person in charge. I can't think of his name. And was impressed. And I'm willing to give support to the KPBS from then on. It was just PR in part, but it was also our class station among a plethora of stations in the San Diego area.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thankful to have it.
We
also had some other adjuncts which were interesting. We have east of here, in the mountains, just east of San Diego. We have an observatory out in the mountains east of San Diego. We teach astronomy at the university, and this is a delightful thing to have. And it's a pretty good one. And we have faculty who go out there regularly and man it. Sorry for the word.
I couldn't think of it either, so that's okay.
No, the man.
And so that's another development that happened at that time.
No, well, this was here before I came.
Oh, I see.
But the question was supporting it.
Yes.
And so forth. So this was another thing that this university supported. We have several things, not all of which I can think of right now, which are unique to San Diego.
Well, there was something that I read about, and maybe you could elaborate about it a bit, the relationship with the zoo and the fact that some of the faculty got involved there.
Well,
in Balboa Park, I guess.
We have external programs, San Diego State, and many more now than when I first came there. And the present president is responsible for many more, with the faculty, of course, which are contributing to the knowledge of the community. We started with Mexico because it was a neighbor of ours, and they were interested, and so were we. We spread to, at least now, all over the world.
Mm.
And exciting. Under the current president, and I have to talk about him briefly now.
Sure.
He was interested in things that were not strictly internal to the university that would help the university, but also organizations and peoples elsewhere. So between him and Jim Cobble at the foundation, they have succeeded in getting interested faculty, and there are a lot going all over the world, helping and collaborating with different organizations. As I said, you really ought to talk to Jim Cobble if you ever get the chance, because he's younger, so his memory's better.
And the current president is Stephen Weber?
Yes.
And
and with Stephen Weber. They would both give you much better detail than I can do at this stage. It pains me to tell you that I've been 30 or 40 years away from being here, active on the campus.
But clearly the seeds that you've sowed have blossomed.
Yes, and subsequently I have to give credit to them. My job was just to get it going, to turn it around. They have implemented it. Mm-hmm. We had as a relic from educational teaching, machine shops where they made things out of wood and metal and all that stuff. Shops, that's right, shop work.
Right.
And they were down there. And I happen to be very interested, and always have been, in working with a different shop, a shop equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wandered down there one day and introduced myself to the people in those shops, and they were amazed because I was the only president that had ever shown up down there. And I knew what they had. I knew what they were doing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just tickled pink. And I went down there and traded some of the wood that I had at home for some other wood that I needed for something else. It was a trade.
Mm-hmm.
And got things. Well, anyway, it was delightful to find out they had it.
That's very nice. Did you do anything? Did you make things in the shop there?
Not in the shop. I did it at home. I had a whole set of woodworking tools.
Marvelous.
And metal tools.
Well, I just saw something in your entryway that I hear you made.
I made two of them.
Beautiful desk.
Yes. When we get to Kent State, if we ever do.
We will.
I'll tell you about that. Anyway, what else can I mention?
Well, I think that I raised the idea of the zoo because I had read you talked about symbiosis and clarifying the terminology about the relationship with the university and the zoo in a paper that I read. And I am a lover of the zoo, and so I was really, it piqued my curiosity.
Well, as I think most people, certainly local people, know, our zoo is one of the best zoos in the country. There are others as good or better,
I think,
but it's close to the top.
It is.
And we San Diegans know that.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm not sure how widely that's spread. We have faculty working with the zoo.
And what do they do?
Well, biologists and who others?
Anthropologists,
certainly.
I think I read, yeah.
We have some pretty good faculty here for that area. I've gone through that. I did go through that with the faculty one time when I was new here. And not only the zoo, we have all sorts of other things in cooperation with people in the vicinity who have
wonderful.
An educational bent, that have something to offer us.
That's wonderful. Well, I did read that you got very much involved with the community. Tell me about that.
You remind me of something else. Not long after I came here and I got the publicity in the papers as the new president and so forth, I was asked by someone in the community to talk to the Jewish community at honoring a rabbi here,
mm-hmm.
who had come to town some years ago and who was loved and well known in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and met the community, which I had no contact with at that time, mm-hmm. except this person who knew who I was and so mm-hmm. forth. And so I gave a little talk about the rabbi. And at the end of the talk, I said, I'd be glad to answer any questions. And hands went up and all that. I said, what's on your mind? And this person said, you just came to the community here and didn't know anybody. And now you're giving a talk about the rabbi as if you knew him. Oh, I said, I forgot to mention a small point. And he said, what is that? I said, he's the rabbi that married us.
Oh, how lovely.
He was from where I was back.
Oh, how lovely. What a lovely story.
Coincidence entirely.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
So that was one outreach to the community project.
That did a lot. Yeah, you just made me think of it. I wouldn't have otherwise.
Uh huh. That's very nice.
Another place where we made contact and met with the chancellor of UCSD, and we became friends, and we had contacts between the two of us. The universities, in part because I fostered it. Which is good.
Yes. Well, it sounds like you weren't just a fixer-upper. You also...
Well, I have something to show you.
By reaching out to the faculty senate, to reaching out this way, you were aware of more than just concrete fixing up. You were socially aware of what...
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. I knew the value of... Don't forget, I'd been president of a previous university.
Right.
That was good. So much so that Jim Cabo, who was the ringleader in this one again, and I should mention this, I have to go back a minute.
Okay.
The system, you know, works in three tiers.
Okay, tell me about that. Yeah.
Well, at the top is the University of California with all its universities.
Right.
They take only the top, 5%, I think, of students. They take the top 50%. My figures may be out of date now, I don't know. And the community colleges then take the rest.
Right.
Now, a student can go down to one of the others if he wants to, but to get into a higher one is more difficult. We have a large graduate staff here, which I should mention, which was not anticipated, I think, originally. University of California mm-hmm. has graduate school, the graduate school, and they're very famous for it. But we have a good one, too. I don't know what the relative sizes are, but I suspect ours is as big as theirs. If not bigger, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Well, it's 40 years. It's changed.
Right.
And it was really Cabo, I must give credit to, of the foundation, who worked with people over there. And he produced a contract, which I was happy to agree to, between their faculty and ours for graduate programs, which we jointly ran.
Oh, that's marvelous.
And we're the only university, we were the only university of the second system.
Oh.
Who worked with the UC.
Oh.
And we had students and gave them degrees jointly in the two universities, UC and UCSD.
I wasn't aware of that.
UCSD and San Diego State. Now, one or two, I think, other schools have some arrangement, but not many. We have a lot.
Very interesting.
Well, we weren't supposed to originally. But that came along, and it was very successful. It is very successful, because it's operating even bigger now.
That's great. During the time that you were president, did you get involved with the sports aspect or athletics at all?
Yes, I'm going to tell you something which I don't want. No. Well, yes, you can stop it for a moment. He had a good athletics department. And I was as interested in athletics from a personal point of view as I could be, because I used to get up very early in the morning, between 5 and 6 o'clock, and at the urging of the director of the program, I used to go down to the gym and run and exercise with other faculty and so forth every morning, because I sat behind a desk all day.
That's great.
At my age now, I wish I could do it now, but it was a very salutary thing. And needless to say, it made me slightly popular with the athletic programs. But I attended every football game, every basketball game, baseball, a lot of others, because I cared.
Right.
And I wanted to support. If we have athletics, we should support it. I once talked to the chairman of my board farther on in my career here and told him that I and others had suggested dispensing with Class 1 athletics because it was so expensive. And we weren't one of the best ones in the nation. But he talked me out of it. So the thing to do is support it.
I see here that in terms of your activities in the community, you were chairman of the San Diego Chamber of Commerce at one point.
No.
Well, then somebody wrote that at some point.
I think this is a time to show you this.
Okay. What is this?
One is, as I told you yesterday, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but one of the problems of a president is getting along with the faculty and students. It's
right.
A perpetual fight.
Right.
And I made it my business, and it was genuine on my part. Is that on?
Yes.
Okay. To not be dictatorial.
Right.
As some administrators are prone to be. And I just wanted to show you these as an indication of the student feeling.
Oh, how lovely. Can I read it?
Sure.
We'll put it.
Well,
San Diego State University and Associated Students do hereby present Dr. Brage Golding on this day, May 5th, 1977, with a life pass for outstanding leadership, effort, and achievement in the interest of the student body and San Diego State University. Well, that's lovely.
I cherish that.
That is something to cherish. And this says, oh, we remember your birthday this year award for outstanding effort, achievement in the interest of the student body and San Diego State University, May 5th, 1977. That's wonderful.
You might mention today is my birthday.
That it is, and I am wishing you a happy birthday, and what an honor it is to be able to share it.
Oh, because it's about my birthday, you see.
That's wonderful.
Now turn that off. It occurred to me to mention to you during this discourse the about a week or so after coming to San Diego State, I decided that I needed an assistant, an executive assistant who could interact with the faculty for me and do various odd jobs that the president needs but doesn't have the time to do himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made a number of inquiries with people that I trusted to be fair and impartial, because it's an important job. He can turn the faculty against the president or for him if he wants to. And I had a bad experience, which I'll talk about later.
Oh, you chose Bob McCoy for this job.
No, was walking on the campus shortly after that, after I'd been given information about various faculty members, and I wanted a good faculty member for this, so mm-hmm. be willing to work for the president, mm-hmm. which may not be easy. And they told me about several faculty members. And I had made up my mind before I ran into this faculty member on the campus walking. He stopped me and he said, "You're President Golding, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "I'm Bob McCoy, assistant professor of English." And he said, "I just wanted to meet you." I said, "Well, that's fine. I want to talk to you." And he said, "Me?" I said, "Yes." And so I talked with him, and I told him at the end of the conversation that I wanted to ask him if he would be willing to become my executive assistant. Mm-hmm. And he looked at me, and he said, "Why me? You don't know me." I said, "Yes, I do." He said, "You do?" I said, "Yes, I know all about you." And I proceeded to tell him some things about him. Mm-hmm. And he was flabbergasted. He said, "How could you do this your first time, your first week on campus," or whatever it was. And that impressed him very much. And he said yes, finally. And he started to work for me, still a faculty member. And it was one of my best choices. And he was one person, and I had earlier at previous schools, our school, people I had picked. I picked one particular person to be assistant to me, and he became the president. Very hard to keep saying, "The president wants this and the president wants that," but he really wanted it. And I had to fire him. Mm. Because he was assuming the president's role, and that's not the role of an assistant, as you well know. So he was and had been all my tenure a pretty self-effacing person, which I wanted, mm-hmm. and he understood that, but he was good. And he used to draft speeches for me. Well, I had a lot of speeches to give. And he was an English professor, which was very helpful.
Yeah.
And I would tell him what I wanted to say mm-hmm. in general and say, "Draft something, Bob." And he would do so. And then I'd take it and I'd rewrite it. An English professor is prone to flowery phrases mm-hmm. and allusions. Allusions, not illusions. And I'm not that kind of person. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be in character. And even once in a while, I'd catch him in a grammatical mistake, which gave me great pleasure. It's not often an engineer corrects an English professor.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And don't think he wasn't told about it.
Oh.
He sure was. And we forged a very good professorship relationship, so much so that years later, when I was asked to come out to Colorado to take over a school, mm-hmm. And it was summertime, beginning of summertime, I called Kent State, where I was at that time, got hold of Bob mm-hmm. and said, "What are you doing this summer?" And he said, "Of course this summer." I said, "Well, cancel it or get someone else to take it." I said, "I need you out here." This was after I'd left. And he came.
Oh, how wonderful.
He left his family there, came out for 2 months or so. And place was in bad shape, and I needed his attributes.
So it was a good team.
Oh, it was a great team. We we synergized.
Yeah, that's great.
And I just want to tell you that. And he was a big help to me here. And he was the one that listened to this conversation, getting back to the subject that I told you about.
Yeah, well, that's great.
I just wanted you to know that. He would talk to you much longer than I would if you ever got hold of him.
Well, maybe that'll happen. I don't know
what's
in store, but...
I was trying to think of another faculty member that is knowledgeable.
Something here says that I was very interested because it said that you are responsible for over 40 master's degree and PhD students, and then you worked with handicapped students as well. Tell me about that.
I had a great interest in handicapped students, helping them. And when I came here, it's again the next university. No, it was Wright State.
Okay.
I forgot to mention that then. At Wright State, it was built when I was there.
Right.
With provisions for handicapped students.
Oh.
Everywhere.
You were in the forefront of doing that then.
And not only that, but we built subterranean passageways, tunnels, under the whole campus, which has been continued, so that students could go from one building to another in inclement weather and have no steps to climb or go down. It was innovative.
Right.
And it's very successful. When I came here, of course, it was too late to do that. But I was very interested, so we established a handicapped person's office with people in it to take care of the handicapped.
That's terrific.
I forgot to mention that earlier.
That's a great contribution.
It made me happy. I don't know right now where they're still doing it, but I assume they are. And they probably thought it came out of heaven.
Well, that's an important innovation. And did you work directly with doctoral students at all? Doctoral students. Did you get involved on any level with them?
Yeah, but it was at another university.
I see.
That was right.
I see.
No.
You were involved in going out. You were still on boards, weren't you, at that time while you were at San Diego State? Different boards, or?
Yes, I was. Well, I was interested in doing things with the public.
Right.
But I was also on several boards of companies.
Yes.
And which required a lot of travel. Unfortunately, most of the boards were in the East. I was here. Two of them were in Boston, which couldn't be farther from San Diego. But that was part of my background in business.
Yes.
Which was a help.
Right.
I didn't have a purely academic background.
Right.
It was long. Well, I remember I told you about the airplane.
Yes.
I had to commute all these trips. Anyway, there are so many things I could tell you about San Diego State. It was a better than average school, although outside of California it was not considered such, but it was. And I was pleased to have come here.
It seems like you clearly did more than fixing up. You innovated and pioneered as well.
When I was here, I had someone do this for me. It was kind of complicated. That's an organization chart I had done for what I was responsible for.
Oh, my.
Each of those have subdivisions.
Here is George Gross.
Yes.
I see him. Yes. And there you are. So Up here is business and financial affairs. William Erickson.
He was the business manager. Business vice president.
And then this branch.
Is that still on?
Yes.
Okay.
We have student affairs, academic affairs, university affairs, and business and financial are the four.
That's the way I organized
major.
It.
Right. This is certainly well thought out and organized. Oh, here are the disabled students down here under student affairs.
It takes a lot of thought to keep track.
Discussing your time at San Diego State, and I believe that we were going to address the issue of promotion and tenure.
Promotion and tenure is, I can continue, one of, if not the most, delicate subjects in academia.
Mm-hmm.
Faculty, and naturally so, are very concerned about their future and their progress and their income and everything else, personal stuff, which is normal. Everybody feels that way. But faculty, I think, feel it more intensely than most people. And it's always a delicate subject that comes up every year at all academic institutions. Who's going to get nominated? Who's going to get promoted? It's their livelihood, too, and it's very important to them. Suffered in academia by being a full professor at every university right off the bat. But I did not accept tenure as a rule. I felt if I couldn't cut the mustard, so to speak, I didn't deserve to be the president. That was my feeling. Fortunately, no one fired me. Sorry. When I got to San Diego State, there were no rules really on promotion and tenure, no specific published rules, because Dr. Love, who was my predecessor, did this himself. I was told that he decided who would get promoted and who would get tenure. He did it all by himself. I've been told that by several faculty members.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised, but I assume it's true then. So one of the things that we did while I was there early on was, and George Gross was the faculty, the dean,
mm-hmm.
who was involved in this thing, was to change the promotion and tenure policies, codify them, and make them workable and fair as far as we could get them. That was an important milestone at the university because it solidified. I supported the Senate on that. And they, of course, were very concerned with promotion and tenure. And I made many friends with it and many enemies, of course. It's the president's fault. He didn't promote me and I deserved it. They all want tenure, of course. And a while for them to understand the importance of it because I kept emphasizing to them that in all my schools,
mm-hmm.
I call them my schools, but that's the way you feel after a while,
mm-hmm.
that academics and administration are separate.
Mm-hmm.
You can put them together, and a president, they do come together. But one side is academic and one side is administration.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, not infrequently, both academics and administration go over the line. Administration starts telling the faculty what to do when it's really in their province. And the faculty never hesitate to tell the administration what they should be doing. And you have to make it clear in their minds that where the dividing line is. So this is an important advance that we made earlier.
That is very important.
Yes.
Another thing that came up was your involvement with Brazil. Can you tell me about that?
Yes, a couple of professors in the Department of in the School of Education executed a contract with some high up people in the government of Brazil to send some people down there for a period of time, considerable period of time, to help bring the elementary and secondary schools up to snuff that were not good. And so they went down there. They picked, this was, I don't remember whether it was before I came or not, but anyway, I became conscious of it after I came there, obviously. And after it had been going for quite a while, they invited me to come down as the president of the university where these students were coming from, the government of Brazil, and these people. And I went down there for several days, twice, I think. And a wonderful time. We went around to various schools and had expositions by students and teachers. I met government officials. We had nice social hours in the evening. I got to see Brasilia, which is a fascinating city, mm-hmm. with no stoplights. I don't know what it is now, but that's the capital, of course.
Yes.
And it has no stop. It had no stoplights rather. And various architects, famous architects, did the buildings in downtown Brasilia, and downtown was beautiful. And I enjoyed that very much. And as I mentioned to you earlier, I enjoyed very much going to the beaches there.
Right.
For reasons I should not expatiate on.
Well, it sounds like, as you said, the San Diego State University became more and more involved in reaching out.
That's right. That was mostly by the present president.
That's very nice. Yeah. And did you travel to any other countries besides Brazil at that
time?
Yes.
Yes, that brings me into another subject I was deeply immersed in, and that was the Silverman and Rogers contribution to the university.
Right. What's that?
These are two gentlemen who showed up at my office one day in the middle of my, no, toward the end of my tenure there, and me, and I didn't know them from Adam, nor did they know me, except by name, and see everybody, you never know. And they came in and introduced themselves as two people from New York City. Jerry Silverman, who owned a fashion company, dresses for women. They're well known in New York.
I was going to say, I've heard this.
And,
yes.
And Rogers was his designer.
Huh.
He designed a lot. Silverman told him what he thought of would be a good style and so forth. So mm-hmm. would translate it into drawings.
Uh-huh.
Very good. And there's a New York fashion design company in New York, big, and it's the big one in the country. And there weren't any others. Well, there were, but small.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a good business that he had. They were very rich men.
Mm-hmm.
And they were getting older and looking toward retirement and so forth and all that. And one of them, at least, the other one, Rogers, came from southern Indiana, or southern Ohio, I should say, where we were there. That's why he was thinking of southern Ohio. I think they offered it elsewhere, and I'll get to that. But were turned down for reasons which would be obvious. But they talked to me about transferring all their possessions in this business, to a university to start a school of fashion design, which is not common.
Yeah.
It's very uncommon. And one know I'd be interested. And I leaped on it immediately. It appealed to me because it was not normal.
Yeah. Different.
Yeah, different. And I went to New York with them and went to their place. It was a loft, a big place.
Well, that must have been fun.
They had hundreds of design dresses and coats and stuff.
Yeah.
I went to dinner with them, with other designers from other companies. All the ones that you read about in fashion design newspapers or magazines, I met them. And I even had dinner and sat next to Madame Trugère.
Pauline Trugère.
Pauline Trugère.
Right.
Yes. Had a nice talk with her and all the others I met. And it was a new world to me. I had nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. And this sounds interesting. And it would be a drawing attraction for the university. Mm-hmm. Remember that statement. And I don't think out in the Midwest, the trustees, the governor, and the faculty would be very keen about it. It's mm-hmm. not in the normal one of the fields. So I came home and I called my vice presidents together one evening at my house and told them about it. It was too bizarre. Mm. Out of the academic field. Designing out of your head is not academic. God, I can't sell this. But the more I thought about it, the more I liked it. And he was talking about a big gift. Millions of dollars worth. Mm-hmm. And I got an idea. First, I talked my vice presidents into agreeing. Mm-hmm. That took a little persuasion. And then I asked the two gentlemen, since they had displayed their stuff in New York all the time, if they would be willing to come out to the university and put on a little show for the trustees and faculty. And they said, sure, we'd love to. They were with me on what my problems were. And I then said, wait, I've got to get approval of the board and faculty, or they won't. I wanted them to come. Mm-hmm. Nothing better than a show. And so I called a faculty staff meeting. That's hundreds of faculty and staff. And I said, told them we had this opportunity and would they be partial to it? Well, they didn't think much of it. I said, oh, wait. So after I talked to him, we agreed on a date for a show and so forth. And mm-hmm. I called a meeting of all the faculty and staff. And they had brought with them the women who put on the show, the whole thing. Money was no object with them, more than they could use. And the costumes, many, many costumes, and music.
Oh, great.
And they went on the stage in one of our places there and put on a real show, just like you would in a theater or something. And when they finished, the faculty gave them a standing ovation.
What a great idea, right.
And the trustees, well, the trustees were worried about funding it, mm-hmm. naturally, and such their business, one of their businesses. The faculty were against it on one reason only. Would it take money away from their departments? Just opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's a great story. I mean, so it came to pass.
It came to pass.
That's wonderful.
And I went back and forth to New York frequently.
What a nice thing. How interesting. That must, it's different.
But more than that, I knew the faculty would object with the worries about taking funds away in another department and so forth. They had no feeling for design, except maybe a building in the civil engineering department.
Well, you educated them.
Yes, I think I did. Well, I got educated first, because I didn't know anything about this. They educated me.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting for dinner in a posh hotel with all these people whose names I knew from the paper, the magazines my
right.
wife had, was a great experience.
And that's fascinating. That's very different. And it sounds like...
It's out of the ordinary.
And
it's a
happy story. You also mentioned briefly to me, and I'd like you to talk about it, that in each university where you were, you taught. And you taught math?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
This was at Kent State.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, what I just told you.
Okay, that's at Kent State. Yeah, we're segueing into Kent State. We'll get into more Kent State.
That's right.
But... You had taught math prior. Did you teach math at
Purdue? Yes.
And at San Diego State as well?
When I became head of the School of Chemical Engineering at Purdue, I was a student.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the math department. And since I'd come from Purdue, I knew the faculty.
Right.
And I asked them if they would be... needed and would like to use my services as a teacher of elementary college math and so forth. And he said, yeah, we're sure. It was right after the war and students were coming back in droves. So I taught, well, every university, at least one course and maybe two. It took a lot of time, but I wanted to do.
That's great.
And it didn't do me any harm either. Speaking with refreshing me. I'd been out in the Army for 5 years, mm-hmm. or for 3 years and a half, or four, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. And what was pretty gratifying to me is that in the first semester I taught trigonometry, I think it was, they gave me a class of freshmen who were below the norms, to put it mildly. No teacher wants to teach a bunch of below the norm students.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that kindly.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that semester, they had a test for the whole group of sections of the thing, and I came out on top. My students came out on top.
Oh,
and they were the worst.
How wonderful.
And
wow.
they shut up. I really explained it, did my best. They weren't great, but they were good.
That's terrific.
And I was very happy with that.
That's terrific. That's really great. Well, you were, we were kind of making the transition from San Diego State University to Kent State. How did that happen?
That's interesting. Again, someone showed up in my offices. I solicited no jobs, with one exception, and they came to me. And I was known in Ohio because I'd been there.
Right.
And I told you off the record earlier that two gentlemen showed up there and talked me into going to Kent State. You remember that? I mean to Wright State. I'm sorry.
I remember about Wright
State.
That
made me known in that in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
With the chancellor and the faculties
right.
and so forth. I had Ohio State and
right.
Miami and Wright State. And I knew all the other presidents, of course, of the other colleges. One showed up and said he was... he said he was the state looking for a president. This was after the shooting incident.
I was just going to say, I see here it's 1970 student protesters,
yes.
Penn State. Yeah.
Yeah, I had heard about it, of course. It was in all the papers nationally. But they showed up and wanted to know if I would have an interest in going out there.
Mm-hmm.
They had heard about me at these two schools and thought I would be the right person to come out at a time of trouble. I'd already gotten a reputation of being a fixer-upper.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about it, and it appealed to me, fixing up. Life was hard. What's the word I want?
Horrified.
My wife was horrified. She said, "You got a great job in a great place. You're well thought of. Why do you want to go back to the cold Middle West and take over a place that's in trouble?"
Mm-hmm.
That's just what I wanted.
Challenge.
She thought I was crazy, of course. So I had to work on her first. And I did. And she said, "I'll go if you go." I said, "I'd like to go out and see about it." So I did.
Mm-hmm.
So at their invitation, I went out to Kent, Ohio, which I had done. And it was a Midwest town.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'd grown up, type I've grown up all my life with. And it was in a sense a come down from this big, not only big, but metropolitan place.
Mm-hmm.
Kent is not a big city.
Oh.
That's where the college was located. In fact, all the colleges, the public colleges, were in small towns in Ohio, in the Four Corners, particularly. And, which is probably, I know it was deliberate. Went out to Kent, backwards,
mm-hmm.
back to the state I had taught in before, and met with the trustees that evening. And I didn't care whether they thought well of me or not, because I was not really desirous of going
mm-hmm.
there. I didn't know much about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never been there. I knew of it, of course. Drawing pictures in my mind. And I met with the trustees with a dinner in the state. And then we met in a room at night. And we stayed there till late talking. And I said what I thought. What I'd heard about Kent, what I'd done at the other schools, I didn't care whether I told them the unvarnished truth or not.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know who I was as best I could in a short time. Because I didn't want them to ask me if they didn't want someone like me. Because
mm-hmm.
I was a little different from most presidents, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
At least I've been told that. And they thanked me and I left. And there was a gentleman of the old school who was there on the faculty, on the staff, I should say. Very correct. He was a retired military officer and very deferential.
Mm-hmm.
And he took care of organizing things on campus and trustees' meetings. Chairs were there, the lights were lit.
Yeah.
Meals were ready and all that, that kind of person.
Yeah.
With a lot of background experience. Anyway, I spent the evening with these guys and I didn't know what they were thinking. And I went back to the hotel where I was and I was undressed and a knock came to the door. Oh, someone knocked on the door. Knocks can't come to the door. And it was late. Midnight or something like that.
Oh,
I was undressed. I opened the door and it was this gentleman who takes care of these things.
Yeah.
And I looked surprised and he said, "I beg your pardon for coming to you at this
yeah.
time of night. And I wouldn't bother you except I was dying to tell you something." And he says, "I come of my own accord, not from the board." So I said, "Come in." Came in, sat down, and I said, "What happened? Did they kicked me out. He said, on the contrary, he said, after you left, they all looked at each other and said, that's the person we want.
Oh, how nice.
And that made it hard for me to think about saying no.
Mm-hmm.
And so, after much decision again, I left here. And I have a bunch of letters here from the faculty and staff.
I look forward to reading them after, and
you may have them.
Make some copies.
Who begged me to stay when they heard that I was thinking of going.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm trying to tell you is I left every school I went to with good feelings, and that's important.
That is very important.
Because my predecessor here, no, was it Kent? Sorry. My predecessor, Kent, thank goodness, was terrible, to be honest about it.
Well, he was there during the whole upheaval.
Could do nothing.
I see.
And he was bad.
Mm-hmm.
He was dishonest in addition, but I can't talk about that. He said, they were taken with you. He said, personally, I hope you come.
That was very nice.
It was very nice to come at night and tell mm-hmm. me that. He said, looking forward to working with you. And that was it. And I said, well, thank you very much. I said, I made up my mind, and I will consult my family first, as I always do, because it's a go again. Mm-hmm. And children particularly. But it's also hard on the spouse,
sure.
Male or female.
Sure.
It's a relocation, a big one. And I went out, of course, several times to, well, after saying yes, I went several times. This was right after the riots of the business and thing. And their president then was a very nice guy. This one was nice. And I liked him very much. He happened to be out of town, far away, when those things took place. So he wasn't there when those things happened. But the faculty and the trustees never forgave him for this. It wasn't his fault. But he felt terrible, too, not being there.
Mm-hmm.
He got back too late.
Mm-hmm.
And so he resigned, but agreed to stay on as a professor, which was fine. And I knew him because I was at meetings when I was
mm-hmm.
the other school or Florida State team. I went to Kent, a house there on the campus. It was already built. It had been a farmhouse. It was a very nice one, though.
Nice.
And fortunately, it had front and back stairs, which no one could think of. I thought of it as a way to escape sometime. People I didn't want to stay with or something. And I used it. I had enough experience at other universities by then. I knew it was time to escape sometime.
Now, by this time, were your children grown?
Yes. They weren't with me.
Okay.
Again, it was a different kind of university.
Mm-hmm.
It was a respected one. It was just 50 miles or so north of Cincinnati. There were three major universities on three other corners of the state.
Mm-hmm.
In this corner was Miami University. But it was small, relatively small, mm-hmm. but with a good reputation. But as I told you before, the townspeople wanted a state university. And so did the people downtown, to handle all of the prospective students that the private Catholic university couldn't handle.
Okay.
They were back from the war.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just jammed. The private university was jammed. So they raised these two men I told you about that visited me.
Right.
Raised money from the townspeople and so forth and gave half of it to the private university to help it, mm-hmm. and half to buy some land and put up one building.
Oh, at Kent State, by the time you got there, was it calm? I mean...
I'm sorry.
You were talking about Wright University at one point. That's okay. That's why I'm switching to Kent State.
Thank you.
That's okay. At Kent
I
State... Well, no, it's... Listen, we're all in Ohio now.
Yes, we're back in Ohio.
We're back in Ohio, and you're at Kent State, and it's after the major turmoil.
No, let me tell you, I wanted before I forget it. One of the times I was visiting Kent State then, after that, before I took the job, I was driven back to the airport to go home, back here, by the chief librarian of the so-called library they had there then. And it was a good one. And he drove me in his car back to the airport, which was in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were driving along, I asked him about the library. How big was it? What did they have? How much money did they get? I always ask these internal questions when I go to a school.
Okay.
In fact, when I took this job and the one Wright State,
right.
I insisted that when they came out to interview me, before I went to them, that they bring their fiscal officer with them. I was a part businessman.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know they had the money to run pretty good programs.
Mm-hmm.
What condition were they in? Because a lot of schools weren't. Turned out they were all right, but I wanted to know, so the fiscal man did come each time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and this one I was interested in because it had a good library. Interested in libraries.
I remember that from before. Yeah, that's a very
so he
that's
drove
a good
me
marker,
back.
In other words.
Yeah, that's right. So he drove me back to the airport in Cleveland, and on the way I asked him all about the library, and I asked him about the fiscal stability of the library. He said, well, we get money all right, but he says, nothing great. But he says, we get along pretty well. And then he said, oh, my God. And I said, what's the matter? He said, it just occurred to me that you're going to be the president in deciding how much money each department gets allocated.
Oh.
And I laughed. I said, that won't influence me.
Yeah.
But I remember that.
Yeah.
He was stricken.
That's funny. Yeah.
Anyway, it was a very interesting first year. This I remember vividly. There were about 100 students on the campus. Not students, 100 people on the campus,
mm-hmm.
young folks,
mm-hmm.
who had gathered at Kent State, and only Kent State to my knowledge, on a lawn of the campus, and it's a beautiful campus. From all over the country to demonstrate there about the shootings. When I got there, I saw all these kids on the campus, lots of cars coming out from all over the country,
mm-hmm.
and they pitched tents. My predecessor couldn't handle it. He went out there and preached to them. He was a pastor, previous president. And preached to them, and they laughed at him, you know, made fun of him.
Oh.
Yeah, it was bad. But they were also upset because prior to those events happening, the trustees had approved a big addition to the gym there.
Hmm.
And as the gym started getting shape, just as I got there, some student with a big mouth said to the student body that they were building this gym thing on hallowed ground where the shootings took place. That's all they needed. And I had my demonstrations.
Oh.
There's a book about this.
Is there?
Yes, you'll find it in most libraries. I didn't write it, but someone wrote it, and I forgot. I don't have
it. We'll find out.
It'll be in every school library anyway.
Oh my, so they said it was on hallowed ground.
Hallowed ground, that was the phrase. I started it, so I had my own demonstrations.
Oh.
And I found myself in a unique situation one day. I mean unique. I wish I had a picture of it. I was standing on the roof of one of the buildings.
Oh, my.
With a pair of binoculars in one hand and a walkie-talkie in the other hand, looking down at the foundations of this library addition and finding a big steel fence across it and 100 students or several hundred students on the other side, or not students, young people, demonstrating and mounted police behind them on horses to break it up. What a picture.
Yes. Thank you for painting it for me, though. I mean, it's and thank you for sharing it, because
it's something I could never
visualize it.
Oh. That was not what a new president was expecting to face. And that's up.
Yes, that is really unique. How did it go after that?
I'll tell you. I went down and welcomed the students. Of course, the former president dared to do that. And I told them I was new. I wanted to learn what their problems were.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I had determined beforehand that it was not on hallowed ground. The students said it, and it spread. They were looking for something, anything but studying. But I didn't cut much dice with them, because they enjoyed camping out. There were students from elsewhere, most of them.
Oh.
But not all students.
Oh.
But it was never made public that these were not our students. The Kent State students walked by them without looking at them and went to class. Major thing. They didn't approve. They were conservative, middle country people.
Mm-hmm.
And Ohio is a very conservative state.
Yes.
I got to know the legislature and the governor and all that.
Who was the governor at that time?
Jim Rhodes.
Okay.
I have two experiences I want to tell you about that have nothing specifically to do with that.
Okay.
That was just after that, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting event occurred. This one was the day I came to Kent State permanently as the next president. I was in my office there and looking around and seeing if I had a comfortable chair. And my secretary then came in and said, one of the trustees is on campus. And I said, who is it? And she told me, and it was a female trustee. I had met her, but I didn't know her. And she said she'd loved, since she only met with you briefly that night that I was with them, and she's on campus, and she's up on business with somebody on the campus, would you be kind enough to come up the hill and say hello to her? And I said, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I dropped everything and went going up to campus to meet her. I met her, and we greeted each other, and we sat down and started talking and everything. And it was while the bad stuff on the campus was happening. And she says, I did you a favor to me as the new president. And I said, what is that? She said, I know a person in Washington, D.C., who is head of a mediation board.
Mm-hmm.
And I called him and talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
Either she called and talked to him or she went there. I don't remember that now for sure. And it occurred to me to ask him if he could head a mediation group to come to the campus. He was aware of it. And mediate this problem there. And he said he would think about it, I think. And I stopped her there. I said, I have to tell you something. My first day here. But no, my answer would be no, don't do it. And she said, why? I said, for a very good reason. That's what I told her earlier. I said, there's academic and administrative. the Board of Trustees tells me to run the campus and tells me in general what the guideposts are that I have to do it within. Then it's up to the president to run the campus. And if a trustee interferes and gets a mediator in and the president stands there and looks at him, he's gone.
Did she understand?
She said, oh, she said, I would never have thought of that. I'll drop it immediately. She was nice. We became good friends after that.
Great.
But she had not thought of that because she wasn't an academic, and that's the academic part of me, always thinking how tender the mercies are of the faculty. I'd have been dead that day.
What a beginning.
Yeah.
How long were you at Kent State?
5 years.
Was it a good experience?
Oh, yes. I had good experiences at all, except those unfortunate ones that I've told you some
of.
I had good trustees at these ones. And I told each set of trustees when I came that the president has a dual job. The first is school, and the second is educating the trustees. As to how a school operates and what the feelings are. And they said, thank you. And it's true. You have to educate your trustees. Oh, no, you can't say that, or you can't do that, or this is what we do in this.
I think that's very important.
They can always override me. But if you do it right, they're glad. One of my trustees, the chairman of the board when I was there at first, they rotate, very near the campus, and was a perpetual athletic supporter, that type, which is not bad, but very interested in the campus after he graduated. And he worked for a very large company, salesman, and he was on campus all the time. And I finally called him in. And said, George, I know you love the campus and the people here. You know the faculty. And you were a student here. But I said, you can't come on the campus all the time. And he looked at me and he said, what in the world? What am I doing that's wrong or something? I said, you're saying things to faculty that you shouldn't. And I said, what do you mean? He said, and you're saying things to me that you shouldn't. You talk with your friends on the campus, and there's nothing wrong with that, except you get stories from them, their gripes, and their other things, and their personal statements about me and other people on the campus and so forth, and you spread it. You talk, you was garrulous to a fault.
Yeah.
And I get things coming back to me about what's wrong with Kent State and with other things. I said, you can't do that. I said, I told this to all the trustees, and they were amazed. No one ever says this, but I said, you trustees as an individual have no power on this campus. It's only where, when you're in legal session with a quorum, that you have all the power. As an individual, you have no power at all. He said, is that true? I said, yes, it's law. Did you ever think of that?
Yeah, okay. Clarify. Well, I was thinking about organizations and boards and the same thing, where boards have to be educated.
Right.
It's the same thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
They have no power just walking around the campus.
Right.
They may have an assumed power, or people may assume they have the power, but they don't have it. And I said, you'd kill me the first day I'm here.
Well, fortunately, it turned out well.
It turned out well, yes. She became my best friend of it.
Oh, how nice. That's lovely.
And he was my second best friend. They were all right.
Well,
the board was good.
That's great.
But I wanted to give you that anecdote.
Well, that's a great anecdote. And let me just ask you, because your personal family life, as we are going forward here, your kids grew up, everybody went off to school, etc. You have your three children, Brage Jr., Susan, and Julie. And
those only ones I mentioned that I'll admit to.
And I presume that somewhere along the way, I heard that you have grandchildren, and now you have a great-grandchild or great-grandchildren?
Four great-grandchildren.
Oh, my goodness.
Three boys and a girl.
Well, tell me about the name.
Well, my grandfather's name was Max Brage. Brage was his surname. And, of course, my mother, his daughter, was a Brage, Viola Brage. And she named her firstborn Brage, which is I.
Yes.
And I named my son, my first son, my only son, as a matter of fact, Brage Golding Jr., which he detests. Well, I have to tell you about this, too. It just occurs to me. I was at Purdue at the time. No, I was working for Lilly at the time. And my kids were still up in... they hadn't transferred down. We're still up in Lafayette at Purdue, where I came from. And I announced at home after my son was at dinner that I have decided to go back to Purdue as head of the school of chemical engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And my son looked at me, he says, "No." And I said, "What in the world is that?" He said, "I decided to go to Purdue because they have what I want." I didn't know he was going to go to Purdue. I said, "Well, what about it?" He said, "I was going to take chemical engineering." I didn't know he was going to follow in my footsteps. And he said, "If I go into chemical engineering with the name Brage Golding Jr., he said, his life will be terrible."
Speaking about your son, Brage Jr., and how you never thought that he was going to follow in his father's footsteps.
It became obvious after he said no, that he didn't want me to go back to chem engineering at Purdue as head of the school. That was from my... It was after I... That was right.
Mm-hmm.
He would go as a student in chem engineering under the name Brage Golding Jr. He said life would be hell with it. That I agreed with him. So we reached a compromise. In this one building, which was built for this purpose, it was it housed the School of Chemical Engineering and the School of Metallurgical Engineering. They were separate. I said, "Do you like metallurgical engineering?" He said, "Oh yeah, that'd be fine." So he became a solid-state physicist and, in effect, a metallurgical engineer.
I see.
So we solved that problem.
That was solved. And now there's another...
One other thing I want
yes.
to tell you about that.
Yes.
When I took my son from Indianapolis, where we were at that time, working for Lilly, back to Purdue to register, we came to the desk for registration, just the two of us,
mm-hmm.
and... girl sitting behind the desk looked up and said, "Are you coming here to enroll in college here?" And I said, "Yes, for him." So she turned to me. She said, "What is your name?" And she started to put down data. And my son went up in the air.
Oh,
she said, "I thought you were the student." I was young looking then.
Yeah. I understand that.
Yeah.
So, you have, so far, three Brages. Who's the fourth Brage?
Fourth Brage, there are one-fourth Brage, too, also. The fourth Brage was born just 2 weeks ago.
Oh, my. And he is your son's son?
Yes. No, my grandson's son.
Your grandson's son. Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I'm getting old.
Wow. So wait a minute. You have a son and a grandson and a great-grandson.
I have four great-grandchildren.
Oh, my.
I told you I was old. You know that.
Well, today, no, you're not old. It's just a special day. It's a marker. Wow. So, as you reflect back on everything we've been talking about, we started out talking about your very early days and your family and all. Are there particular, anything you feel like particularly conveying or talking about?
Well, I'm going to tell you something about my family.
Okay.
I've said a few short sentences about them earlier.
Okay.
But I have a family that I'm very proud of. And I don't say that to them usually. So they think I don't care, don't understand, or don't feel affectionate, but that's not true. I have three children, as you know, a son and two daughters in that order. And they've all done well. And they're all, as a proud father says, very smart. My son is a full professor of physics at Michigan State University. Oh, what? Before that, he worked for many years at Bell Labs, a prestigious place in New Jersey, and I used to visit him there. And he was doing, worked in cryogenics.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing solid-state physics, which is a very demanding position and requires great mathematical knowledge, or proficiency, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took the job after quite a few years at Bell Labs at Michigan State, which offered him a full professorship, good pay, and money for outfitting a lab and everything. They wanted him. Professors are very welcome at schools where the professors are at.
Mm-hmm.
With people from Bell Labs, they are the cream of the crop. Anyway, he is still there. Thinking about retirement pretty soon, and that makes me old, thinking about his retirement. He has made a name for himself in the field. He's got many publications. He marvels at the attitude of faculty, who started as faculty, not in business as he did, but how their thinking process works, and it is different, as I mentioned earlier. These are generalities, of course. He has done well. He married a lovely girl who's the daughter of another professor at Purdue while I was there. I knew before my son knew that family. And things have been going very well. I'm very happy with it. He is now at, as I said, Michigan State University and lives nearby in a suburb of where Michigan State is.
Mm-hmm.
And we visit by phone and by visiting in person. And he has two lovely sons. The elder one, of course, is Brage William, to distinguish.
Ah.
It's not a dynasty, really. We have to distinguish. So we named him, or he named him, Brage William. William is his other father, my daughter-in-law's father's name.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Brage William Golding. Continue. He has done well, and I think he's thinking of retirement one of these days soon, in a few years. The other son's name is Nace, which is Hebrew for beloved.
Oh, N-A-C-E?
Mm-hmm. Which my wife, who is more of a scholar in this area than I am, decided that would be a good name, and they took it. They agreed. So his name is Nace Golding, and he has a Ph.D. too. He got it. He started at Berkeley in
finished up at the University of Wisconsin. He liked program better there. And he got his PhD. Who majored in biochemistry, and he married a lovely girl, too. I'm very happy with my chosen selection of mates. He finished a few years ago, and he's down at the University of Texas in Austin, and so is his wife. They both have faculty jobs in biochemistry there. And they have a son. His wife comes from India. She's Indian, and she has a PhD, too. He met her, in fact, Wisconsin. They both had PhDs. And they have a son named Ishan, Ishaan.
Two A's, Ishaan, Ishan.
Was one of the smartest kids I have known at a very early age. Mm-hmm. He could rattle off all the... He became fascinated with astronomy, and he could rattle off all the planets and their subplanets and everything else when he was 2 years old. Barely could talk. He'd gone on in the same system. And I'm very impressed with him. He's 10 years old now. And the daughters, one is Susan, and some may possibly know, was the former mayor in San Diego.
Right.
But before that, she was on the city council for 8 years and then became mayor for 8 years, the longest term you can be.
Mm-hmm.
And in my biased opinion, did a good job in both. And as inspired as a mayor because of term limits,
mm-hmm.
and is now working in industry.
Mm-hmm. Does Susan have children?
Yes, Susan has two children, a boy and a girl. The male member...
Samuel, rather than...
Samuel, as he prefers to be called, majored in industrial design and has been for several years now designing different advertisements and other... and printed designs, and has been very successful at that, and just recently has switched vocations for a rest in, of all things, buying a pizza parlor and putting out the best in the city. I gotta say that. Period. Susan, the daughter is Vanessa, has an interesting history. You're going to have to tell me on this. She went to where she goes in undergraduate.
UCSD.
Same place.
UCSD.
At UCSD, and has a bachelor's and master's degree in international relations, I guess. Mm-hmm. And which is a very demanding course, particularly at the graduate level.
Mm-hmm.
And has been working for the last couple of years after graduating in Washington as a member of the State Department.
Terrific.
And you need my hand. And has just recently been informed that she's one of three persons in the United States that have been offered a fellowship in a prestigious organization whose name I can't think of right now at Harvard, and New York City.
How marvelous.
University.
That's something to be very proud of.
And last but not least is my daughter Julie, who has worked for all of her graduate. She went to the University of Colorado and went to work for the University of Washington. Well, first she organized a bookstore in Missoula, Missouri, the town there. What the name of it? I know. After several years running a bookstore, which was preempted by a new commercial branch of a bookstore.
Oh, that's happening all over.
Yes.
Yeah.
Finally decided that was not for her and moved to the state of Washington, to Seattle.
Okay.
And has been working at the University of Washington ever since. She works as a member of the staff at the University of Washington. And I can't tell you what she does because she's taken one job after another, moving up the scale there. Now she's up to working for vice president, so I think she's doing all right.
That's great. So now you have summed up your children, and as you reflect back on all of this, I have said that what has emerged for me in listening is that embedded in things that you did, you're not just a fixer-upper, as you describe yourself. You're really an innovator. You're someone who's solved problems that nobody else could solve. You've done many unique things. And your sense of doing what is right through your perspective has always been present. And I imagine that your family will enjoy listening to this as much as the university will appreciate your sharing not only the years that you were at San Diego State University, but more about you as a total person.
Well, thank you for those kind words.
Thank you so much.
I want to mention two other schools that I was at.
Okay.
You can move it back to.
No, that's okay.
In my retirement, I was called a number of times to, since having gone to three universities already, I had a kind of a reputation for fixing up things. And I'll be very brief. I was invited to come back to several universities in my retirement, which was in the East, to take over universities temporarily when the president was ill or he didn't have one, he had finished. And I just want to mention for the record that the first one, I got a call from the chancellor of the state of Colorado to take over a university university, Metropolitan State University, as a matter of fact, in Denver, temporarily, because the president was no longer living, and they were looking for a permanent one, but wanted a temporary one while they searched. So I got permission from my wife to travel from the East to Colorado, a state I'm very familiar with, because Julie went to the University of Colorado. And had a good time for several months at the Metropolitan State University. And I took that occasion to correct some deficiencies and put it in pretty good shape when I left. And they wanted me to find the next president, which is an interesting job, while I was there. And so I was on the phone a lot, talking to people that I knew about recommendations, and finally had the pleasure of introducing this new candidate to the faculty and the board. I went home, and some months later I got a call from the same chancellor saying he had problems at another of the universities in Colorado. Would I please come out and take that over temporarily and search for a president for that one? So this time I was smarter, and I took my wife or had her come with me later and stayed there for only a few months, very few months. But it was in the ski area in the mountains. That's one of the principal reasons the students there, I discovered, went to that school. But it was exhilarating in the literal sense. And that was Western State College. And after that, I said no more. And we too trudged wearily home. Now I can finish it.
Well, and now home is here in beautiful Carlsbad, California.
Carlsbad by the sea.
By the sea. And I am so delighted that here on your 86th birthday, you are sharing this part of your life. There's so much more. I see all these letters and articles. We have just skimmed the surface, but I think that you certainly have offered some special stories and your insights and your perspectives, and thank you so much for doing that.
You're welcome.